Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
The big news of the day, Donald Trump has been elected the 47th president of the United States of America. So we're going to dive into the topic that's on the minds of millions, the results of the 2024 US presidential election. Here is the moment Donald Trump made his acceptance speech.
So I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve.
There you have it. It's a turning point for America and for the world. So we want to hear from you tonight. How do you think the outcome will impact Ireland? That's going to be a big question in the coming weeks. Will the policies of the new president change the way we do business, the way we engage with the US, or even the way we view global politics? Get in touch with your thoughts on 0871 880008, and let us know how you think this election will ripple across the Atlantic, because it's definitely going to have an impact. There's no doubt about that. You can also get involved on social media, on X at Classic Hits Radio or Ireland's Classic Hits Radio on Facebook. But first, we're going to chat to a couple of guests to hear their perspectives for a look at the results from inside the US. I'm delighted to welcome Chris Cruz, news producer for Blaze TV, a leading news and entertainment channel catering to viewers all across America. I'll also be chatting to Carl Dieter, who is an American-Irish entrepreneur and financial commentator, for his take on how the news will affect the Irish economy. So a bit of perspective from both sides of the Atlantic. But firstly, though, I am excited to have Chris joining us all the way from Texas. And he's on the line there right now. Chris, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Gary. How are you?
I'm good. Look, a long night for Irish people. You guys had a big, long day there as well. Describe to us what the feeling is like on the ground where you are.
Right now, the feeling is really going back to 2016, a lot of people were feeling the same way. The one thing we were worried about was a repeat of 2020, where everybody went to sleep thinking that President Trump was going to win, and then wake up to all of a sudden that we have President Biden. So it was a little bit of scared at the beginning of, are we going to have another, you know, weird election day? But the one thing that was really, really, really important for the American people that were voting was they really wanted to show the establishment we are the one in charge. For example, Kamala Harris had $1 billion to spend during her campaign, while Trump had $388 million. And it shows that money was not really making any difference. Kamala Harris had every endorsement from anybody, you can say Beyonce, Cardi B, and still was not able to close the gap, to the point where even Jake Tapper here in CNN was shocked that Kamala Harris didn't even outperform Joe Biden when he was running in 2020. So right now, everybody's super excited. The markets are reacting positively. The one thing that we're waiting on now is to see if other world leaders, for example, we had Russian president confirmed that he is ready to negotiate with President-elect Donald Trump. Everybody's excited. Vice President Harris is going to deliver her concession speech today at 4 p.m. Eastern. So let's see what happens after that. Right now, everybody is just worried about another January 6th. That is the big topic right now here. Are we going to see riots from the left? Are we going to see people come together? And like Donald Trump last night said, he wants to be a unified president. Let's see if that happens on January 6, 2025.
Well, you mentioned, Chris, that everybody's really, really excited, but I don't think I don't think it's totally true to say everyone, because there is a large swathe of America that didn't vote for Donald Trump. And it's going to be an interesting few weeks as the transition takes place, how that's going to go. And of course, you mentioned Kamala Harris will be coming out tonight to concede the election officially and, you know, have a little speech and tell us what she's thinking. But in terms of the Democrats, how do you think they're feeling today in terms of, do they know why they lost this election? Do they know why it was such a decisive victory for Donald Trump? Because all the polls were saying that this was down the middle, as close as it possibly could be, but it really was a decisive victory. Is there a lot of introspection going on the Democrat side politically and also socially?
I think your regular Democrat, the one that will say, I'm a Kennedy Democrat, is reflecting of what happened. Those are the same Democrats that were not happy when the whole Biden and Harry switcheroo happened after the first debate. So the more centrist Democrats, they're the ones sitting back thinking, what really happened? Was this really the best candidate we could offer? The ones that are really upset, for example, the 67 million Americans that voted for Kamala Harris, those were the ones that are still wondering what we could have done better. And I don't know if Kamala Harris could have done any better. Got to remember, she was running for president for the last, 3 months?
Couple of months, yeah.
So did she have the best? I don't know. Also, there's a lot of information coming out about her campaign that she was not being surrounded by the best people. But that could go either way, right? Because they said the same thing about President Trump. So I think right now the best I can explain is every Democrat, the 67 million Democrats that voted for her, they need to go back to the drawing board and say, what really happened? Was this misinformation, malinformation? Did we really not have a candidate that we could vet? But one thing I did talk to voters around here in Texas, now Texas is more Republican than Democrat, but the Democrats that I talked to, they were upset at the change that happened right after the first debate between President Trump and President Biden. That was the one that really, they felt that it was, the choice was taken from them.
In the sense that Kamala Harris didn't have to run a primary. It was, I know, like, people who, who would be on the other side of the debate would say that she was almost anointed as the candidate and she didn't have to go through the primary process. And the first time she did try to do that, I think she didn't make it past Iowa. So she was never, I suppose, battle-tested in terms of elections.
Yes. And that's the one thing, is Kamala Harris wasn't battle-tested, especially if you really think about it. President Trump is not even a candidate that you can put in a, you can't even put him on a candidate bubble, right? Because he speaks from the cuff, he speaks from the hips, he shoots from the hips. And when you're dealing with a person that's been in politics, right, she was in California, she was an AG there, she became a senator, then she became a vice president. So she is your typical establishment politician. But then when you go against a person that is not a politician, right? Yes, he was president for 4 years. But at the same time, this guy, not even his own people can keep him in talking points, right? He wants to say what he wants to say. So I don't think she was battle tested. Was there a better choice? I think so. You know, there was a Mark Kelly would have been a better choice. Governor Shapiro would have been a better choice. But this is the one that they chose. I hope Democrats that are the ones that are controlling the who's going to be next, right, in 2028, take a hard look and say, who can we battle test now? Now, the cool thing about now in the Democrats, like, don't have to worry about Trump running again. This is it. He is done. He'll do his 4 years and he will walk away. But what are the Democrats going to do and what are they going to learn? Because this is going to be the first time ever that a Republican gets the popular vote. 72 million votes and counting. Arizona still hasn't fully counted all their votes. They're about 67% counting, and Trump is up 51% of the vote, about to be 52 if they continue this way. So Donald Trump will lock in the popular vote in the last 20 years. That was the last time a Republican won the popular vote.
That was George Bush, wasn't it?
How this... Yes.
Yeah. And were you surprised that Donald Trump won the popular vote?
I was really surprised. Here in America, Democrats usually take that. Like I said, 20 years was the last time a Republican. And the one thing Republicans really, really suck at here is messaging. They don't know how to connect with the regular American. And it seems like Donald Trump, after he went to Joe Rogan, did the Madison Square Garden rally, he seemed to connect with the typical American. Even here, a statistic that it blew my mind, that the evangelical, the Christian vote was not the block that helped Trump win. It was your normal day-to-day American. And that says a lot about what can the Republican Party continue to do to keep connecting with the regular voter, not just the conservative Christian.
I see a lot of commentators in the U.S. are saying that the Republicans now are almost like the Democrats of 20 years ago. I mean, it's a wide coalition, and dare I say the sentence, I can't stand a big tent. He's got the working class, he's got minorities, he's got people voting for him that wouldn't have generally voted Republican in the past. What do you think is the appeal that Trump presents to voters that may not have gone Republican in the last 20 years?
I've been able to follow Trump and attend three of his rallies. The one thing that really stood out, if a journalist is really giving Trump the benefit of the doubt, is that Donald Trump wants the best ideas. And the best way to communicate with Trump is give him the best ideas, let him take the credit. And I think that's the best thing Trump can do. For example, RFK Jr., he just wants to make America healthy again. So guess what Trump's going to do? He's going to give him that. Elon Musk, what does he want? He wants us to be the best at space travel. Trump is going to let him do that. So if you give Trump the best ideas, Tulsi Gabbard, what does she want? She wants us to have the best military defense. So he's going to let her do that. So those are the best things or the best quality of Trump. The problem is that the Democrats, they call themselves to be the big tent, but if you don't march by their marching orders and you color outside the lines like RFK Jr. did, like Tulsi Gabbard did, like Elon Musk did, then you're no longer part of that party and they kick you out. Trump was willing to listen to their ideas and say, you know what, I like that. One of the biggest scare right now is that, okay, RFK Jr., what part is he going to play in your administration? Because RFK Jr. believes that oil is bad. Well, that kind of goes against what Trump believes. Trump calls oil liquid gold, right? So what are you going to do? So I believe that the reason why a lot of Democrats or independents are coming to the Republican side is because Trump has shown, at least the last year that he's been running for this office again, that he's willing to sit down and listen. I'm a Latino. I'm from Puerto Rico. And one of the biggest things for a Latino is family. Trump wants you to build the family. Trump loves his family. Those are the things that I believe are resonating, especially in the minority communities, that, hey, I want to do it my way. Can you give me the opportunity to be better and to do better? And Donald Trump is delivering that message. The Democrats are focused more of identity politics.
Chris,
and that doesn't resonate with the minority.
Well, to that point, and as you say, you're from Puerto Rico, and there was an awful lot of discussion about how that famous joke that was cracked in Madison Square Garden at the rally there a couple of weeks ago by Tony Hinchcliffe, I think, where he likened Puerto Rico to an island.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff, the garbage line that went viral. As a Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. how did that make you feel? Did you take it as a joke, or did you take it in the context it was at, or were you offended, or did you know anyone in your family that changed their
that
vote because
was
of it?
Hilarious. I call my mom, I call my dad. They were laughing. The only ones that were really offended were my sisters.
Okay.
But I get that. You know, my sisters get offended very easily. I understood what he was going to. I knew who he was, right? I knew his job. It was difficult. I will say this. It was a bad joke. Would I have said that in New York? Absolutely not. New York is run by Puerto Ricans, right? There's a majority of Puerto Ricans. That is, my mom was born in New York. She's a New Yorker. So it was a bad joke, and that's one thing that if you saw a lot of the social media videos coming out of Madison Square Garden, everybody acknowledged Puerto Ricans acknowledged that it was a bad joke. Did he really believe that Puerto Rico is an island? No. But here's a cool thing. That line brought stories. I lived in Puerto Rico. I was there for 12 years. Puerto Rico does have a trash problem. We don't have enough space for our trash. So guess what? That joke brought light into the trash problem in Puerto Rico. So I hope now that the Puerto Rican government sees, oh, we are in the news talking about trash, and we've been trying to let America know, hey, we do have a trash problem. So I could see this turning into a good thing for Puerto Rico now to have the light shine on them, like, oh, you guys, you have a trash problem? Yes, they do. So I did not find it offensive. I found it that he said a bad joke, and I don't believe that any Puerto Rican that was truly voting for Trump changed their mind after that wrong joke that was said by that comedian.
Many years ago, Chris, the famous line from Bill Clinton was, it's the economy, stupid, you know? And the economy in America at the moment, as of yesterday and today, is firing on all cylinders. It's actually in pretty good shape under Biden and Harris, and Trump is inheriting a pretty good economy now. That doesn't mean that inflation isn't through the roof and groceries are inaccessible to an awful lot of people in many, many areas. I mean, it's something like $13 for a dozen eggs in parts of America. So I get that. Do you think that inflation and the economy and immigration were the issues, the main issues that people were voting on, or were they voting for personality? What's your feeling about why people voted overall?
No, like you said, $13 for 12 eggs, that's horrible. You know, I myself invested in 12 chickens. So guess what? I'm no longer affected by the $12 eggs.
There's a clever move. You got your own chickens.
I do, right in the backyard. But Americans were tired of paying $13 for eggs, $8 for milk. And they realized, wait. In 2020, like, what happened? You know, 2016, like, I was not paying all this. Like, we understood that, you know, we had a pandemic that happened, and that's going to cost because of shortages. We understand that. But it seemed to get worse and worse and worse. Yes, you're right. The economy is getting better, but it's not to where it was in 2020. So people are saying, you know, I live in Texas. I don't live in a border town, but I live in a border state. And the influx of illegals, right, people that have crossing that are just literally crossing the Rio Grande, it's increasing. You can tell that there's a difference. The problem that a lot of people like me, like Hispanics have, is that, you know, even though I'm not illegal, right, because Puerto Rico is part of America, but people that are not doing it the right way, they come here and they get the benefits. Absolutely. I believe we should help people out. But when you're helping them out over the people in Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina, when they just got hit with a hurricane, that's when people start wondering, wait, is this America first, or is this, you know, the people that are crossing over? I just think that people were tired of paying more money. And the one question that Trump asked every single rally is, are you better off today than you were when he was in office?
The old Ronald Reagan line.
The answer is no. Yes, exactly.
Chris, I want to ask you, because you're a news producer for Blaze TV, it's a leading news and entertainment channel, and it goes all across America and the world indeed. And we live in a time of fragmented media, you know, podcasts, YouTube. Cable news is a totally different beast than it was even 4 years ago. And I remember as a child, I grew up in the States, and the first election I remember watching with my mum and dad was Bush and Dukakis in 1988. And I've watched every single one since then. But last night, something really stood out to me. If I was to go onto my television, I had options like I'd never had before. Amazon were running their own show with Brian Williams. You had, of course, Fox, CNN, News Nation, Newsmax. All the channels were doing their own thing, BBC, Sky News. But on YouTube, there was separated events that were going on, different podcasts, left and right, viewing parties. You had the Young Turks, you had PBD podcast, all of these guys doing their own election coverage. And in the world that you live in, do you think that this might be the first election that was so influenced by new media? Joe Rogan coming out the night before the election in favour of Donald Trump is just one of those examples. Are things going to look different from now on?
Absolutely. Think about it. 2008, right, when President Obama won by huge numbers, he was the first president to effectively use social media to get elected. I think Trump saw and he listened to the younger generation and he started doing podcasts, right? And what turned it around was when President Trump decided to prioritize podcasts over the mainstream media. The one thing that would have put the nail on the coffin of the mainstream media was if Trump would have not waited for, you know, your typical New York Times and Decision Desk for to call him the winner and just literally go what the podcaster were saying, that would have put the nail on the head on mainstream media. Legacy media would have been dead last night. But I will say this, legacy media is really, really, really on a life alert. I mean, yes, on life alert, because they're no longer relevant. The Joe Rogan interview with President Trump and Senator Vance and even Senator Fetterman, for the last 10 days, Joe Rogan sat with President Trump, Senator Vance, and Senator Fetterman from PA, from Pennsylvania. And those three interviews, I got more honest answers, except for Trump, yes. He likes to talk and create webs of talking. But those three interviews, you were able to have a serious conversation and it make you feel like you were part of the show and you were sitting next to them, because Joe Rogan has this fascinating way of doing an interview that he's like, tell me this, but why? And he asked the silly questions that would say, you know, it's like the teacher says, there's no thing that's a stupid question. But here's Joe Rogan asking those stupid questions because he's really a person that's curious of the answer. So, yes, I say that Donald Trump was able to use effectively the new media. And I think this was the first time of a president that was able to use podcasts, like all of them, in the right way so that he can communicate. Because if you think about it, I don't know how it is in Ireland, but here mainstream media really hates Donald Trump. So they really don't give him the ability to communicate. Even if he's talking in circles, they still want to call him Hitler. They want to call him a fascist. So when he goes and does a podcast, and it's a free-form podcast of 3 hours, the whole Hitler thing and the fascist thing might come up, but it's not the overarching topic of the three-hour conversation. Anyway, think about it, right? This interview, we've gone for like 20-something minutes, but you have time slots to fill. When you do a podcast, you just hit record and you talk to them whenever you're done. So I think the new media right now is going to change, you know, 2028 and the midterm election that is going to come up in 2 years. So we'll see how effective this will. But I believe that legacy media last night saw their last hold on anything important like a presidential election.
Yeah, it seems to me, just from a quick flick through YouTube, you've got the likes of Chris Cuomo now, who has his own YouTube channel, Bill O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. A lot of the guys from the legacy media are moving slowly over to YouTube, and they're doing rather well over there as well. I just want to ask you one more question, Chris, before I leave you, because I know you want to get back to probably producing your own show and indeed watching the news. May we live in interesting times. In terms of relationships in America going forward, there's a lot of families that voted differently. There's a lot of friendships that voted differently, and there's going to be, I suppose, high emotion and maybe, you know, some mental health challenges over the coming weeks, because America is so politically divided. It's going to be tough to kind of thread that needle. How do you think people are going to react to last night's result in the next couple of months?
Well, I'll tell you this, I'll make this personal, right? Like I said, my mom and my dad, we all voted for Donald Trump. I'm one of five, and my brother also voted for Donald Trump. My three sisters, voted for Kamala Harris. And it was very interesting this morning because they decided to leave the group chat that we have. It's really sad and it's kind of annoying, and I took it personal because it's at the end of the day, my mom, we're a Christian family. We believe in God. And she sent us a message kind of, you know, trying to get a hold of her family again. And she said, elections will come and go. Don't let politics ruin your relationship. One of the truest signs of maturity is the ability to disagree with someone while still remaining respectful. And it's sad to see that. I didn't think that was going to hit my house where my sister will stop talking to me because I voted for Trump. And I thought it was a joke. I thought, you know, that's something that was happening to somebody. But it happened to me today, last night and today. And my sisters won't talk to me. They all left the chat. I've been reaching out to them. They won't talk to me. Now, yeah, I'm not, you know, I was joking with my brother and be like, haha, we won, you know, Trump USA, MAGA country. But I didn't think it was going to go down the route of hurting their feelings. Absolutely, I apologized to them. And I told them, hey, I was joking. I still love you. I'm your big brother. I'm the oldest brother. You always be my little sister. But I think right now what everybody needs to do is, right, take your victory lap. But at the end of the day, come back together and reassure those family, hey, I still love you. It's going to be okay. You know, and I do believe America will go through a health crisis when it comes to mental health. And I don't know how to reach to that side because they see me as a threat. They see me as the enemy, and I'm not the enemy. I just voted for a person that I thought would do better for me, and you voted for the person that you thought was doing better for me. But at the end of the day, we have to come back together.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And I think everybody would agree. It'd be nice to see Donald Trump maybe, you know, consider that over the coming weeks about, you know, calming things down over there and calming things down all around the world, because everyone's got an opinion about politics, but also everyone has a vote and everyone also has a right to vote in whichever way they want to. I hope you and your family start getting on soon again, Chris. I'm sure you will. There's no doubt about it. And I do really appreciate you giving us the time tonight to discuss recent events from all the way across the big pond, as they say. Thanks a million, Chris.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it. Have a good evening. Thanks for joining us. Okay, listen, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, but we're going to keep the US election coverage going. I'm going to be joined in just a couple of minutes by Carl Dieter, who's an American-Irish entrepreneur and financial commentator, for his take on how the news will affect the Irish economy. Don't go anywhere. Very welcome back to Nighttime Talk here with Gary Brennan in for Niall Boyne. And get in touch with the programme on 087-188-0008 and let us know what you think of the results of the US presidential election. Donald Trump, president-elect, the 47th and 45th president of the United States of America. We're going to keep on this topic, and I'm joined now by Carl Dieter, who's an American-Irish entrepreneur and financial commentator, for his take on how things went. Carl, it's great to talk to you. I was watching you closely on Twitter last night. You seem to have predicted this one correctly. What did everyone else miss?
I think they just missed the fact that there was a widespread rejection of the way that America had gone in the last 4 years. I think that if you consume kind of, you know, just a lot of the American standard media, that they were completely in lockstep behind Joe Biden and also with Kamala Harris. But people, when they talk amongst themselves, that just wasn't the case. I was there about 2 weeks ago, well, 3 weeks ago at this stage, and there was just a complete absence of support for the Harris campaign. And it surprised me because there was a huge absence of support amongst South American people that I know who are described as the Latino vote. I didn't see any people, you know, black folks in Chicago wearing Harris Walls shirts, whereas when I was in Chicago in the past, coming up, like during Obama, he was everywhere. Hillary Clinton was everywhere. And this time there was nothing. And I think that they really just read the crowd wrong. And Kamala Harris was the most unpopular vice president in American history ever since they started taking popularity polls.
I do see a lot of people now saying that the signs were there all along in terms of Joe Biden's favorability, the feeling in the country about the economy, you know, the wind was blowing in one direction, and it would have been easy to tell if maybe you got your head out of the polls. Do you think that's a fair, you know, assumption?
Yeah, well, that, if you were following me on Twitter, you know that I was having a go about the polls last week, and it actually, I ended up on a different radio station and kind of got a bit savaged about my view on there, but the point is, like, the polls, you see, Trump has this thing, and I suppose you get it in a lot of different countries, where someone will vote for him but they're just not going to tell you that they vote for him. But they're completely fed up with the establishment. And there is a kind of a pious disdain from the Democrats for anyone who doesn't agree with them. And so people have learned that, look, I'll just answer the way you want me to answer, but I'll do what I actually think is the right thing when I'm in the polling booth. So, you know, he has taken a popular vote. He has taken, you know, a strong electoral college win. You know, the U.S. has the Senate. Like, everything has gone against the kind of the correct establishment, which is what most people in Ireland agree with. That, like, in Ireland, it's weird. I'm a swing voter, so I voted for Democrats in my life. I voted for Republicans. I've almost never met anyone in Ireland who has anything good to say about Donald Trump, even though he had a good presidency. And it's just there's a real blinkered vision, at least in this country, of American politics. And I think that, like I said, I think that the media being in lockstep with the Harris campaign, they just figured, look, we'll just keep on saying she's the best, she's going to win, and then she will. But they weren't betting on a few things.
That brings me to something I wanted to ask you, because you're American-Irish, and I am as well. My father lived there his whole life, and I went to school over there. And I find sometimes that there's absolutely a love of Democrats in this country, you know, no matter what. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter about their history, about their policies. There's just this kind of default Democrat standing. And it goes back a long way, of course, to, you know, Robert Kennedy and all that kind of stuff. Do you think there's a lack of understanding about how America works fundamentally in Ireland, UK and even Europe?
Yeah, I think there's a lack of understanding about how America works, and I think there's a lack of understanding about what Americans value. So I was having a conversation the other week, and people were saying, you know, Trump, like, he's portrayed as if he's this, like, successful guy. Well, he started off with, like, you know, $1 million when other people had nothing. And then he went bang, and then, you know, he went bankrupt again. And sure, he made all his money on reality TV. And they'd look at that as if, like, this guy's a charlatan. Whereas Americans would look at that and say, wow, you know, he started off, he lost everything, but he made it back, and then he lost it again, and then he found a new way to make it back. You know, he got shot, and the first thing he does is stand up after getting shot in the head and shouts, fight. Like, these feed into massive, archetypal, desirable aspects of American life, which is the fighting spirit, which is, you know, getting back up after you've been knocked down. And even in the vice president pick with J.D. Vance, like, he is a very inspirational character. If you look at his life, he was, you know, he wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy, which is about him growing up as a hillbilly in a broken family with a drug addicted mother. He goes off into, you know, the U.S. military, gets sent off to a war, comes back, puts himself through Stanford Law School. You know, look at what he's risen to. This is all stuff. It, like I said, it feeds into a very deep psychological need in the USA that anybody can make it. And that's the message that Americans like. And that's the message they can buy into. They don't really buy into a campaign based on abortion, based on, you know, being told that if you don't vote for us, you hate women, you hate, you know, minorities. And that's why even the minorities themselves, blacks and Latinos, voted en masse. And what I was going to get back to earlier was that in the past, I think the Democrats had relied on the ability to suppress social media. But Elon Musk buying Twitter changed all of that. There wasn't going to be suppression of anything on Twitter, or at least it was going to be a bit more even-handed. And they also didn't bet on the fall of the legitimacy or the, not the legitimacy, but perhaps the credibility of the mainstream media. People just clearly aren't listening to them anymore. And they're paying more attention to, you know, podcasters, to a lot of different ways to find the information that you consume.
This was something,
and
actually,
I think in time that's going to be.
Yeah, this was something that came up with my previous guest, Chris Cruz, who works with Blaze TV, and we were talking about that, the importance and the difference, because, I mean, I was up all night watching it, as I'm sure you were, as I know you were, actually. The options were limitless. I mean, like, it wasn't it crazy? The options were all over the place. I mean, you had your usual Sky News, BBC News, CNN, Fox, but there's NewsNation, there's also YouTube, Amazon were running an election night special. Media is so fragmented now, and their numbers were through the roof. I will be interested to see how well CNN and Fox did compared to previous elections. There's been a seismic shift, hasn't there, in messaging?
There has. And I mean, there's been not only a seismic shift in where the messaging occurs, I think the overall tone of the messaging, like Fox used to have a kind of an overtone of saying, you know, the Democrats, they're, you know, you can't trust them. You know, they're like a bit of a slur approach towards the way that you would view Democrats, who, by the way, is like in general half of America. And I want to get on to another point, by the way, that America is in no way as divided as what the media is telling us it is. But the other thing is, I was watching some of the post analysis on MSNBC, and they were just reaming off these like rapist, misogynist, racist, convicted felon, bankrupt, blah. Like all they could do was go after Donald Trump, and no one wants to buy into that message. Like that's just that negativity like loop. No one gets inspired by that. And I actually had to turn it off, even though I was interested in what people had to say, because I was thinking to myself, why, like, the guy just won an election and all you can do is act like a sore loser and just think of every slur you can throw towards him. And he was elected by more than half of American voters. But the other thing I was going to say about the, you know, another overtone that you hear is, oh, the country's divided, it's broken. Absolutely not the case. I was traveling. I was in four different states a couple of weeks ago. I was in Florida, New Jersey, Illinois, and Chicago, and also in Arkansas. Americans are great. For the most part, they love each other. They're still friendly. They're still nice. You know, if you fell down on the street, they'll help pick you up, dust you off. It's the highly politicized and mostly kind of college campus and elitist people who will be saying that the nation is doomed. I think for regular Americans, so many of them don't even vote because they don't care. They're just getting on with their lives. And I think a Trump presidency will be good for them.
Yeah, it's a point I often make. It's just me. It's what I think. I think most people actually live in the middle. We do have our fringe left and we do have our fringe right. But for the most part, people have more in common than they think they do. And the media divides.
Absolutely.
The media divides to make money. I want to ask you, Carl, because you've got such a financial background. What do you think this means for Ireland going forward? The Apples, the Googles, you know, the usual question that we get all the time when we get a new US president.
Well, look, that whole momentum was put away under Barack Obama when he was president, and it hasn't gone away. And American, you know, taxpayers push upon their politicians to get money that they believe is theirs. And no different than we would do if there was something that was, you know, considered Irish assets or ultimately Irish type companies that were making, you know, millions elsewhere and we were getting nothing. So that's not going to go away, but it's also not going to move fast because it can't. There's too many tax treaties, too much complexity. There's a, you know, legislation has to be passed. This isn't typically the kind of thing that you do a presidential order on, which is where the president can kind of make certain rules that are just made overnight at the you know, quick swish of a pen. So it's a trend that's been there for a while. It's not going to change. I think that it will change the kind of the overtones or certainly the mood music, and that we probably have to have a think about what do we do. Because Irish trade, for instance, with Brexit, like American trade is about 10 times what we do with the UK. Every man, woman and child in Ireland has about €10,000 worth of trade with the USA when you divide out the amount of trade across our population. It's absolutely gigantic. They're the most important market in the world. So we will have to protect that. But I think our politicians will be practical, and there'll be a lot of people jumping up and down saying, you know, bad things are going to happen. I think most things will be fine. I think the things that are also going to take place initially, Donald Trump has some work to do in the USA. He has some work to do with a restoration of the ending of, or a restoration of peace and the ending of wars, which he has always been a very pro-peace president. And, you know, he said he was going to end ISIS. He ended ISIS. There was no new wars under Trump. You know, even Obama, who had won like a Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, brought America from 2 to 7 wars. And I think he has some things that he wants to make his claim to fame, because this is his last term for definite, which is a president of peace, a president of the restoration of the USA. I don't think we're going to factor too highly on his to-do list early days. As time goes by, of course we will, but there's time to deal with that. And I think I think there'll be things put in place that will help us deal with whatever comes down the tracks.
And I'm no financial guru myself, but I mean, I can barely balance my own accounts. But to my mind, these companies need European headquarters. No matter what the policy is in the United States, they need to have presence around the world. Would that be a fair thing to say?
That absolutely is. Yeah. I mean, but and it's the same. Like if you're a tech company in Ireland and you go to do business in America, if you could do it in any meaningful way, you have to have a subsidiary there.
Mm.
And then they have, you know, various things that they do to make sure that you're not like squirreling money back to the parent company, et cetera. And for a long time, Ireland, no one likes the word tax haven, but we had some rules here that were, you know, pretty shoddy by international standards and meant that a lot of tax wasn't paid. But we're still the only European member or English speaking member of the EU. You know, we have, because of all these companies agglomerating here or coming here, we've actually built up a skill base that is quite suited towards working in a lot of the high value international American companies. And, you know, even like on that basis, well-educated population, favorable tax codes, that's not going to go away. So like I said, there will be changes, but the world is going to change whether Harris got in or Trump. And it's not like Harris would say, oh, let's not get our tax money from, if we feel it's due from anyone, never mind Ireland, France or otherwise. So it's not going to be like an overnight thing. I just think that there tends to be a lot of fear or scaremongering stuff that, you know, oh, the wrong person won an election, the whole world is going to go on a vastly different trajectory now. It's not the case. Most of the stuff that will happen was going to happen anyway.
Big ships take a long time to turn around, as they say. What do you think he means when he talks about tariffs? The most beautiful word to him, but it strikes fear into the heart of an awful lot of other people across in America.
Yeah, so he's a student of a certain part of economic history in the latter part of the 19th century. And there was a president who tended to use tariffs quite a lot. And, you know, Trump looked at that period of history and realized that America was running huge surpluses because they were heavily into manufacturing and other people sending in goods. They put tariffs on them in order to make them kind of less competitive. And he thinks that that can be done again, basically. Now, in a modern globalized world, tariffs are generally badly thought of. However, I don't know that he necessarily wants to do the things he says he's going to do. In other words, I think he's signaling. So there was that, for instance, that, you know, automotive factory that was meant to move out of the USA and then just didn't because he had said, look, you know, if I get in, that's it. You know, you'll never sell another car in America. And I think in some ways he wants to protect the US economy, and that's very admirable. I think that making an economy stronger is a much better way of doing it than imposing tariffs. But at the same time, there is also kind of countering arguments to be made that countries like China, who have had massive levels of manipulation in terms of their currency, in terms of how they do trade, that, you know, they don't play by the rules either. So I don't know that it's going to be like tariffs on everything. I think that if and when they come, they'll be targeted towards the bad actors or those who he feels have played an unfair hand in the past, and that he wants to rebalance the dynamic there, which, by the way, Trump is actually really good at. Like anyone who has read any of his books or looked through his history, he's quite good at spotting how to make deals. Like he actually wrote a book, I think, called The Art of the Deal or How to Do a Deal. And he just talks about the way that you need to make sure that there's give and take and that you're not left with nothing, and nor is the other person. So I'd say the tariffs are going to be kind of specific. They're not just going to be something that weighs down on every product going to America. You're going to be looking at cars. You're going to be looking at goods from China. You're going to be looking at very specific items. And his whole plan, I suppose, in the meantime then, is to get the USA much more or not reliant on energy from abroad. And by doing that, then you can also start to grow your economy internally and start to get those surpluses back, which is, I think, what he wants to try and achieve.
And finally, Carol, I want to get your perspective on what's next for the Democrats, because a lot of people are saying this is a political realignment. Last night's victory wasn't exactly tight, you know, like an electoral sort of an electoral win and a popular vote says everything that needs to be said. You could call it a mandate. Many people are. It is. What's next for the Democrats? They need to figure out how to get ready for 2028. And if they do figure that out, who do you think is next and ready to stand up and stand?
I don't think Kamala Harris is the candidate. I really don't. So I'd say that she's not, should not be part of that plan. For a start, I think they need to get away from trying to make, making an entire campaign based upon someone's skin color or their gender. I think that's a mistake. They need to look inward and say, what is it about regular working Americans? Like, how did the Democrats lose regular working Americans, blacks and Latinos, to the Republicans? Like, that's a really weird thing. And it does happen, by the way, because if you remember, Republicans are the people who freed the slaves, and the slave owners were all Democrats, and yet black people in modern America tend to be Democrats. So you can't see this kind of allegiance swap over between them. And I think what they need to do is get rid of all the far left thinking, the woke ideology, a lot of they're thinking that it's more important to worry about, say, transgender rights, which I'm not saying is not important, but I'm just saying it's not something that I think is systemically important. They would rank that above, for instance, factories in Nebraska or something. Or even if they say that's not the case, we care about it, that's the perception. They have to come back to the center and be relevant to regular Americans. At the moment, they have become a fringe party. And the only thing, by the way, that saves them from utter decimation, and I'm talking Reagan 1984 style decimation, is the fact that some of the states that have flipped blue, and they're kind of perma blue because they're just Democratic strongholds, have the biggest counts of electoral college votes in the USA. Otherwise, last night would have been a hell of a lot worse for them.
Well, there you go. Thanks a million for talking to me tonight, Carl. It's an interesting time, that's for sure. And everyone's talking about it today. And look, the next 4 years, we're going to be still talking about Trump. That'll be 12 years, which is an incredible run when it comes to any politics. So there you go. That's where we are. Thanks a million for chatting to me tonight.
Right.
Love to talk to you again,
Thank
Carl.
You. Take care.
Cheers. Good luck.
Will do.
We're going to go to the news, and afterwards we're going to take a couple of your calls on this and see what you're thinking out there all across the country. Get in touch on 0871 880008. Are you happy Donald Trump won, or are you terribly, terribly sad? Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with me, Gary Brennan, in for Niall Boylan. For the last hour, we've been talking about, of course, the US elections. Donald Trump is the new president of the United States of America, and Kamala Harris has just spoken in the last hour and conceded the election. So we are looking towards January when he is sworn in once again. We've been here before, haven't we? We certainly have. But don't go anywhere, because we've got loads to come for you later on in the programme. We're going to be talking about that fine that the FAI has been hit with, €10,000 for the booing at God Save the King. Excuse me, I couldn't get it out. And then we've got a great listener dilemma I want to get to later on, as well as an interview later on with a magician. We all love talking to a magician. He's going to try and perform a trick on me live on air. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. But for the next few minutes, I want to get your reaction to the last two interviews we did on the US presidential election. Plenty of people are talking about this, and we have been inundated with texts and calls. It seems like everybody's got an opinion on this one. Valerie, I'm going to go to you first. Now, Valerie, you think it's going to have a positive impact on Ireland and it's good for our economy?
Well, it's a fact now anyway, isn't it, Gary?
It's what there, Valerie? I didn't hear you.
I beg your pardon. Hold on a sec.
Okay, Valerie, we'll let you sort out your line there. I'm going to go to Alan. Alan, what do you make of the events that unfolded early this morning?
Well, I predicted this would happen. Now, going back at least to when Trump was having his debate with Biden, I knew he was going to win. The election was a foregone conclusion. Kamala Harris was not go to galvanise the audience the way Donald Trump can. And she didn't go down the low field like he did. So he got a lot of people over and he won the popular votes. And so he had the mandate and we just have to hope that he doesn't... I don't think his policies are dangerous. It's his personality and the way he goes on and the way he holds control. It's not very nice. Hmm. He's very arrogant and very aggressive.
Do you think, Alan, a lot of people voted for him holding their nose?
Some states, some people did. But I don't think there would have been that. I think most of the people that voted for him were sick of the economy. It was the price of everyday products in America is very dear. And people just felt they were better under Trump and they went for him. But like what Donald Trump did there at an auditorium going back about 2 days or 3 days ago where he was doing a simulation of sex on the stage. Now, if that had happened years ago, he would have been disbarred, and he could do anything he wants and not know. It's a cult. The cult of Donald Trump.
It seems that he does get away with things that would certainly end anyone else's campaign. There's no doubt about that. Go on there, Alan.
I believe Donald Trump is the Antichrist.
Right, okay. Well, just stay...
I don't believe in the literal sense of the Bible.
Right, okay.
But he's actually hijacking fundamentalism and they're following him hook, line and sinker and they really are a dangerous group of Americans, the fundamentalists.
Well, you're talking, Alan, you're talking about a huge amount of America because, I mean, a popular vote is no mean feat.
Well, the American vote... The fundamentalism equates to 50 million in America.
Right, okay. That's science.
And
Alan,
they're all in the Bible Belt, like Texas, North Carolina,
right.
Alabama.
Okay. Alan, stay with me there because I've got Maris here and I want to get Maris's take on this. You don't like him and you think America's a racist country.
Yourself, so you're talking to me, Gary, yeah?
Yeah, Maris, you don't like Donald Trump.
Yeah, sorry. No, not really as a person, no. I think he's not a very good example as a human being. He's a failed businessman. He paid off a porn star. I don't know what people see in him. He has a flawed character. I was talking to a friend of mine. He lives up in Montana, which is close to the Canadian border. And he said he's going to sell up and go up and live in Canada because he said America is lost forever now. Why would you go back?
And Montana went red last night, so he'd have a lot of friends that would be there. Republicans. You go.
That's why he's gone out. That's why he's getting out. They can't take us. They just don't think. They think. But to be honest with you, look, I'll be honest with you. Every white man that's living in America is from Europe.
And that's the truth
of it.
Because
you said you have. Yeah, because they're all invaders from Europe. They're not the original people of the Americas. They came in and took the land off the Native Americans from South America up to Canada. Look, I'll give you an example of history if you want to learn a bit. When Columbus landed in America, there was over 100 million Native Americans from South America to Canada. By the time the Second World War was over, there was 800,000 left. Here's your genocide. Does anybody know about us?
Oh, I think a lot of people know about the very bloody history of the founding of America. There's no doubt about that. But I want to stick with Donald Trump.
Exactly.
I want to stick with Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Why do you think it is that he won so resoundingly last night?
Because America is a racist country and they're all Ku Klux Klan. America is a white supremacist.
But Maris, he improved his vote with Latinos, with African Americans, with all minorities.
There's the typical Irish answer you gave. There's the typical Irish white man answer you gave. Latinos and Mexicans. They're native to that land.
But they voted
for Donald
Trump.
The white man that runs it is not native to that land.
But Maris, they voted for Donald Trump. No, I'm just asking what you make of that.
Yeah, but did they vote for him or were they hoodwinked into voting for him?
Well, that's
you know, the more you hear a lie, the more you believe it. Michael Jackson said that.
Right.
Look what happened to him.
Yeah.
All it takes is, I think America has gone backwards. I don't like the man. I don't want believe what he believes in. I don't look at him as a... Any man that has three wives and five children is a flawed character to me. And any man that buries his ex-wife on his land for tax purposes is a dog.
And if you were living in America, Morris, would you have voted for Kamala Harris, or would you have not voted at all?
I probably wouldn't have voted for either candidate, because why would I vote in a country that I don't believe in? America's soul is lost forever.
You think it's that
It's an abandoned country.
You think that it's that existential? You think it's that existential that this is the end of America?
Yeah, it's gone. The America is absolutely gone down the tube. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Chase the dream. Two cars, two houses, two swimming pools. For what? For nothing.
Mm.
And they're telling people, oh, all these foreigners on their land. I was talking to a Native American guy. He said, there's no foreigners on stolen land. There's no illegals on stolen land, Morris. And that's their belief. Because they're from that land. The white man came in and took everything off them.
Yeah, well...
That's how far it goes back.
Oh, that isn't. There's definitely a bloody history there. But, I mean, in 2024, we've got a new president. It's his second term, third time running. And he's going to be in charge over the next 4 years. And it's going to have an impact all over the world. What kind of impact do you think it's going to have on Ireland?
I think very negative, because the Irish people and the Irish politicians are boot licking now at the moment. They didn't want to know when Biden was here. You know, now he's going to be known as Genocide Joe because of what he reports. But the only thing that frightened me, to be honest with you, Barry, is the first phone call Trump made was to Netanyahu in Israel. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
The first phone call he made around the world was to a guy who we all look upon as trying to wipe out a nation of Palestinians. But one of the things I'll say to you about America is there's good people there, and I believe in them, and I hope they have hope. But can they put up with the next four years of whatever this madman is going to bring to the world? Any man that supports Russia is not a man in my books.
Well, there you go, Morris. I'm going to go to you, Joe. You think Donald Trump speaks
the truth?
Good
evening, Gary.
Good evening to you. It's a pleasure to have you on. You think he speaks the truth?
Well, he does speak the truth, yeah. Look, you look at the last couple of years under the Biden administration, and you look at the world in general. We're in a very, very dangerous liberal agenda now going on around the world, and it's very, very concerning. You know, and I think that, and look, no disrespect to Morris, I respect Morris's view, and I respect everyone's view, and I'm not going to criticise Morris for what he said, but I'm just expressing my own view that I think that a Trump victory is this is the best thing ever happened, because, number one, you must remember, he was the first man to take on Kim Jong-un in 2018. He was the first man to actually meet a North Korean leader. And that was one of the most historical meetings that ever happened.
I think I think he was the first U.S. president to walk across the border into North Korea. Wasn't that it?
He was. Yeah, that's right. Now I know the peace talks didn't go according to plan, but with respect, I still think it was a historic event, because I do remember back in 2017, the world was on a knife edge, because your man, Kim, was letting off a lot of flaming rockets left, right and centre across the peninsula. And there was actually consequences that it could head over on this side of the world. And I think only for Trump that time, we would have been in an Armageddon situation.
Rocket man. Is that what Donald Trump called him? Rocket man.
What he is, a rocket man, yeah.
I want to ask you, Joe, do you understand why people don't like him at all?
Well, look, I understand that people have an agenda against him. That's understandable, yeah. Look, he's not perfect, but he is the best that's there at the moment. Because I tell you something, if you want entertainment, the guy is box office entertainment. I was watching him there all the last couple of months, his press conferences, and I tell you, you know, I actually get more enjoyment listening to him than I would listening to the likes of Harris or Biden or any of the rest of them, because the guy's an entertainer. Now, I understand that people have an agenda against him. That's okay. But that's their motto. But my motto is, and I'm just speaking on behalf of myself, I have great respect for the guy. I think the guy, he's a businessman. You must remember he's a businessman, and he's a man. He gets things done, and what he says goes. He does it, and I think that we need a sort of a little bit of conservatism to come back into society, because the way the world is going at the moment, with all this transgender nonsense and everything, and all this woke crap, it's getting worrying. And of course, today you had our good old colleagues, the Labour Party, giving out as usual. Now, I wouldn't take any heed of what they'd say, because they'd give out about a barking dog if he was barking, you know. But with respect, I have no problem with Donald Trump. I am delighted he's in. And I'm looking forward, and I'll tell you something. I know if Niall was on tonight, Niall is probably celebrating as well, you know, and a lot of people who have old school conservative views would be happy, you know.
Niall is somewhere in the world, and I'm sure he's smiling tonight.
Yeah,
I'm sure he is. Stay with me there, Joe. I'm going to go to Rob. And you think that the media and the government have been disgraceful towards Trump, that he hasn't gotten a fair shake?
Good night to you, Gary.
Good night to you, Rob.
Yeah, 100%. That's my thoughts on this completely. Well, our government has been a disgrace. Oh, sorry.
Rob, are you there? Rob? Okay.
Yeah, hello.
Oh, there you are. Rob, are you there?
Yeah.
I keep going. The line dropped there for a second. You were saying that the Irish government have been disgraceful towards Donald Trump.
Completely.
In what way? Things they've said or...
Yeah, and wishing, you know, bad-mouthing them effectively, you know, and wishing that it would only be the Democrats that would be in charge.
I don't think it was just them. I mean, I saw that in the UK, Labour are having a few problems with things that.
Exactly. And
they're foreign secretary.
The new opposition leader there, the new lady there for the Conservatives,
Tom Starmer,
that he'd had. Yeah, Badenoch, yeah, or Badenoch, that he'll. That something will have to be done about that, because he compared Trump to Hitler a few weeks back. And here's the thing, your man Trump doesn't, whether he hears these things or not, or how his advisors are telling him, he's picking it all up and it's there to be thrown out there when these people go to meet him.
Do you think they thought he had no chance of getting back in and that they could say what they liked?
Yeah, pretty much, Gary, yeah. They obviously thought, yeah, they're not going to go for this unelectable person that's been in trouble with the courts and the January 6th thing and all this stuff, and that he complained that the last election he was robbed. But it got me thinking a lot there today, and I happened to be listening to that program on RTE in the daytime, the phone-in show, what they call Lideline. And they had Irish Americans on it, and there was a lot of them on it. They were in very depressed. They were very down, and some of them were actually filling up when they were speaking, because they couldn't accept the result. And there was, and they let the cat out of the bag, because Joe Duffy was asking them, who do you think voted for them? Who could have voted for them? And they said uneducated, lower class people.
There's been a lot of discourse online about that. A lot of Democrats are saying, effectively talking down to Trump voters, which, you know. That's a whole other story. But it brings me to another question.
Joe Biden, he pretty much confirmed that last week. Remember when he said
the garbage comment,
the garbage thing. He said, Trump says Trump voters are garbage.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Rob, the fallout of Donald Trump getting elected now. Do you think that there's going to be a mental health crisis across America with the results?
If there is, I'm going to be very surprised. Well, I won't say I shouldn't be with America.
Yeah, it's just a lot of commentators in America have been saying that with tensions so high and emotions running so high, that it's really, really had an effect on people that didn't want him to win again, and almost a sort of PTSD kind of thing from the 4 years that he was in charge.
How does it affect them? How does it affect people like that? I can't understand that. Are they that dense or dim that that's their life? and they're depressed or what have you. And they have nervous breakdowns because that man was elected. That doesn't make sense. They should get on with their lives.
Mm. Some people do take it very seriously.
Yeah, they do, but it's a bit OTT. Back to an Irish point of view, though, Gary.
Mm.
That my thinking is, yeah, I hope there's some retribution now for Ireland.
How do you mean retribution?
I don't mean retribution that Irish jobs will be affected. Well, of course they would be. And they'll be the fall guys. Well, in the sense that if Trump looks at his tariffs and what have you and his trade wars, and he wants to repatriate these companies, and he gets onto the companies that are based here in Ireland, the pharmaceutical companies in particular, and says you have to come back, and the corporation taxes is at the right rate now.
Yeah,
you know,
I think.
And insists that they will return to America.
As earlier on in the interview with Carl Dieter, it's not as simple as that. I mean, we always go to that notion when a new president comes in: is are they going to take Apple and Google and all the big companies out of Ireland? And you know, things are a lot more complicated than that. But I want you to stay with me, Rob, because I'm going to go to Valerie. Valerie, you think it's going to have a positive impact on Ireland and it's going to be good for our economy?
Well, it can't be any worse. You know, things have been so bad here for like the last 4 years.
A lot of people would say the economy is flying. It's the inflation is the only thing, which seems to be the problem in America. I mean, the economy is doing great in America, but the inflation makes it so that nobody feels like it's doing great.
Okay, so what does that mean, Gary, do you think?
Well, that's what I mean, Valerie. Like, do you think that the policies in America will have any effect on our day-to-day lives in Ireland in terms of inflation?
Well, I wouldn't be so sure about that because I wouldn't be educated in finance and inflation and so on and so forth and, you know, across internationally how an election affects a European country.
Yeah. And do you like him, Valerie?
I would hope. Do I like him?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
What do you make of him?
I think he's a very... already he has made historical history here in America. Now, him personally, I mean, I would have supported him in 2016 as well.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I'm glad that he's got the opportunity, you know, and the respect as well. I mean, I have never seen a president of any country to be treated like he was.
And what do you make of all the people that say that he's a misogynist and he's a sexual predator and all the accusations that have been levelled against him and, you know, the cases he's been involved in? As a woman, how do you view that?
I think it's a very personal, emotional reaction to him. You know, I mean, he's not the only leader of a country, excuse me, or a society that has behaved badly in their personal lives.
Hmm.
You know, I'll give you, for an example, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, very famous. Monica Lewinsky.
He stood up and told blatant lies to his people about his personal sexual life. You know, so I wouldn't really base my
and he had his own cases down in Arkansas that people forget about. But isn't that something that you find all around the world? Some people want their leaders to be, dare I say it, perfect in every single way. They talk about integrity, they talk about honesty, mm-hmm. they talk about all of this. And other people would have a similar view maybe to yourself, whereby it's, look, people are flawed. If they do a good job, that's all I care about.
Yeah, and people vote with their pockets or their wallets or their purses.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's how Trump got in, because see, you know, that's what we're all hoping for here. Well, I'm hoping that there will be, diesel won't be as expensive. I'm also hoping as well, you know, that the media will be covering domestic issues as opposed to international, like Ukraine, like Gaza. You know, that's terrible. We all know that. But what about us?
Well, it's an interesting point because, as we know today, Simon Harris said that there's going to be an election this month. I mean, there's been an awful lot of chatter about it over the last couple of weeks. So we've a fair idea. It's going to be the end of this month, and
it's the 29th.
Yeah, the 29th of November, Friday.
It's all on Friday. Yeah.
Just to quickly, while I mention it, it's important to remember that that's not too far away. So if you're not registered, get onto the Citizen Registry now and do that, because that election is going to come out of nowhere. In stark contrast to the US election, which seems to have been going on for 12 years at this stage, and it looks like they're already starting to go to 2028. But listen, Valerie, thank you so much for joining me, and yourself as well, Rob. Thank you, and everybody else for calling in. Look, it is what it is, the US presidential election. I think we've talked it into the ground now at this stage. I'm sure, though, we'll revisit it again, because Donald Trump is, as one of our callers earlier on said, a box office for good or for bad. And I'm very aware that there's people out there who are very disappointed today, as well as people who are very, very happy. So, sure, look it. We'll see what happens.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.